Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
We as a board know Willow needs and deserves a fresh start. And the entire board will step down to create room for a new board. This board replacement process will start promptly and proceed in waves to ensure orderly transition, with all current elders leaving by the end of the year.
In recent days and weeks, it's become clear to me that this church needs a fresh start. The staff that I dearly love, they also need a clear running lane to heal, to build, and to dream. As hard as I have tried, I simply have not been able to get the momentum that we need to address the issues that need to be addressed and to bring about the fresh start. I have spent a lot of time seeking God and asking Him for guidance. He's given me clarity and peace. I am stepping down from my role as lead pastor.
That's Willow Creek Community Church Elder Sissy Rasmussen and lead pastor Heather Larson announcing resignations recently at one of the most influential megachurches in the United States, Willow Creek Community Church in the Chicago area. What is a megachurch? Is it just a matter of numbers? And when some megachurches have 2,000 on a weekend and some megachurches have 45,000 on a weekend or 25,000 on a weekend, it's a pretty flexible term, at least in terms of its numerical value, isn't it? How are they structured? How do they govern themselves? And how did it come to the point where the founding pastor of Willow Creek, Bill Hybels, could go largely unaccountable for years on allegations of sexual harassment and sexual misconduct? He was certainly investigated, but he was not in any real sense held accountable until very recently. We're going to answer some of those questions as we talk about Willow Creek and the dynamics of a megachurch on this Monday afternoon. Scott Thuma joins us. He's professor of sociology of religion and director of the Hartford Institute for Religious Research at Hartford Seminary, author of the books Beyond Megachurch Myth and The Other 80%. Scott, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you for having me.
The most recent story out of Willow Creek is the resignation of the entire group of elders and the two handpicked replacements for founding pastor Bill Hybels, the pastoral leadership there. Did that turn of events surprise you?
Well, I had been following the whole situation closely for the last couple of years, and the latest dismissals and resignations did surprise me somewhat. Yes, I didn't expect them to all resign at the same time.
Can you explain to us how Willow Creek was structured in terms of, for lack of a better word, its governance, and how typical that is of other megachurches?
Essentially, they had an internal board of elders that would have been functioning as the accountability, the check and balance on the senior pastor. That is very much a dominant model. I did a survey of megachurches in 2015, a national survey, and 73% of those megachurches had an internal board format similar to Willow Creek. That's not the one that we tend to recommend when a megachurch asks us what is the best possible format. We always either suggest a church have a board that is either a mixed board with people from inside the congregation and outside the congregation, or they have two boards, one internal group of elders and one external that functions more as a level of accountability that isn't directly tied to the senior pastor.
How would you describe Willow Creek's influence as a megachurch? It's not just any megachurch, is it?
No, it isn't. It's not the first megachurch, and it wasn't the one that started the megachurch movement, as some people have said. But nevertheless, it's been a highly influential church, in part because it was fairly early in the megachurch, in the time when megachurches were proliferating around the country. But I think also because early on, it garnered the attention of groups like the Harvard Business School and other places that saw what Willow Creek was doing, especially with their seeker-oriented worship, as something different, and therefore studied it and raised the profile of Willow Creek considerably higher than other megachurches. But then they also put themselves up as a model in coming years and created the Willow Creek Association, which really identified patterns of behavior and meeting and worship styles and proliferated those across the churches in the United States, and not just non-denominational congregations, but congregations of all denominations and stripes and theological persuasions.
How would you describe Bill Hybels' influence, or is that the same question in a different form?
I mean, yes, in many ways, it is a similar question, and it's a challenge that the church is going to have to address. How much was Willow Creek a parcel of Bill Hybels' charismatic personality? But, I mean, I think it is possible for the church to continue beyond Bill Hybels and with some strength and with some integrity, but it's certainly going to take some work on the part of the church's leadership. Who will become the senior pastor there? How will the next board be elected and selected? And how will they be able to work and develop some trustworthiness with the 25,000 attendees that they have at that church?
What does the term megachurch mean in terms of when you are researching the subject, beyond simply the numbers, but what are we talking about in terms of numbers, and what does that word entail when we say megachurch?
Well, the way we have tended to use it over the years in our research is it's any congregation that has 2,000 or more attendees on a given weekend, but that's only a number in many ways. There's also a whole host of other characteristics that go along with megachurches, and including a charismatic leader, the use of cell groups and small groups to create intimacy, the informal, relaxed worship with large screens, highly technical, all of those dynamics. But megachurch has also come, I think, in some ways to be associated with a kind of derogatory, lowest common denominator worship that has contemporary music that's kind of void of theological content. And so consequently, megachurches get made fun of and criticized probably far more than they necessarily should. And that was part of the point in our Beyond Megachurch Myths book. Much of the research that we've done over the last couple decades shows that there are some very well-intentioned and creative people doing amazing ministry in these megachurches, but they're not everyone's cup of tea, for sure, and people have legitimate complaints, but nevertheless, as a whole, they still are doing very creative and interesting pieces of God's work in the world today.
About a decade ago, I think it was Willow Creek, actually did or participated in, I recall, a study wherein they learned some things that Bill Hybels did not want to know about his church, necessarily. His reaction was a little snippy at the time, I recall covering it, and I think the study was called Reveal, And one of the that it showed was that they were really good at bringing people in, not as good at retaining them. And then in terms of what people at the end of several years, whether they felt like they were having their, for lack of a better term, spiritual needs met, they were not doing very well there. Talk about that as kind of a characteristic of many churches.
That was actually, the Reveal study was actually their own internal study that they found some of those characteristics and tried to respond in many ways to make corrections for that. It's not surprising that they found that. We've found that in some of our research external to the megachurches as well. When you get an organization that large, and especially when you begin to shape the worship service directly toward those who might be seekers, you focus so much of your message on essentially the milk of the gospel that you have to find other ways than to present a deeper relationship with Christ or the meat of the gospel to your long-term people. If the Sunday morning is really focused on introducing the ideas to new believers, people who've never been there before, you have to find strategies for creating discipleship and deepening the faith. If you don't, you end up with what Reveal showed, which is they're very good at introducing concepts and ideas and people to a life of faith, but not as good at keeping them growing and developing and enriching their life. That's always the challenge when you bring 20,000 people together, but that is honestly the challenge of every congregation as well. You have to always move from the introduction of the gospel to a deepening of the faith.
Scott Thuma is our guest. We're talking about Willow Creek and the dynamics of a megachurch. When we come back, do we need a new term since some megachurches are 2,000 on a weekend and some are 25 or 45,000. Stay tuned.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. EdGruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Some Bible passages make us more uncomfortable than others. Take, for example, any passage about money. But just because a topic makes us uncomfortable doesn't mean we shouldn't face it head on. That's exactly what the August issue of the Lutheran Witness has done, with articles on poverty, generosity, money management, and more. You won't want to miss it. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. Mark Lutheran, Edmond, Oklahoma. Emmanuel Lutheran, Manchester, New Hampshire. University Lutheran Chapel, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Prince of Peace Lutheran, Freedom, Pennsylvania. Holy Cross Lutheran, O'Fallon, Missouri. St. Paul Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana. Christ Lutheran, Rochester, Minnesota. Holy Cross Lutheran, Carlisle, Iowa. St. Peter's Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Grace Lutheran, Wellsville, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300. Issues, etc. I'm Todd Wilkins. Scott Thuma is our guest. We're talking about Willow Creek and the dynamics of a megachurch. He's professor of sociology of religion and director of the Hartford Institute for Religious Research at Hartford Seminary, author of the books Beyond Megachurch Myth and The Other 80%. Scott, do we need a new term to go along with megachurch? Because some megachurches are 2,000 on a weekend and some are 25,000 or 45,000. I think about Lakewood in Houston, I think about Saddleback out on the West Coast. Do we need a new term? How do we think about these organizations?
Yes, many people have suggested various names for the significantly larger congregations. You know, even Willow Creek and Hybels, they have multiple locations and 25,000. It's pretty hard to think of that as a single congregation, even at the mega scale. But I don't think any other term is going to catch on unless you call them a denomination, perhaps, or something. But the number of congregations of that size, of Osteen or Hybels or Rick Warren's, is really just a handful of congregations. Out of the 350,000 congregations, there's probably no more than 15 or 20 that are that size and that complex. And so it is important, I think, for us to look at the very, very large ones, in part to see not how to grow that size, because not all congregations should be that size, but to see what they're doing that directly responds to the way society is changing, how people are being shaped. Megachurches have always had a knack for being able to tap into the cultural shifts in America and shape the life of the congregation so as to address some of those. That doesn't take away the fact that they still need to preach a kind of countercultural message of what God wants us to do and not just bow to capitalist pressures or anything. But in fact, we have to begin to think about not making the barrier between the world and the church that great so that we exclude people who are looking for an answer, who are looking for purpose. At the same time, once they get inside the church, then they need to be schooled in what truly a Christian life is all about. And some megachurches do that much better than others, but all of them, no matter what their size, have to constantly guard for not putting the religious leader, not putting the functioning of the church ahead of the gospel. And unfortunately, that's part of what happened with the senior pastors that followed Bill Hybels and the board. They chose to protect its leader rather than to protect the integrity of the gospel and the integrity of the church. And so they're now paying the price, and hopefully they'll be able to pull out of that and find a way to maintain the integrity of the church, even given this fallen situation.
Can you explain what the thinking behind the multi-site or the satellite model is?
Sure. It basically is trying to be church in five or six locations at the same time, with the idea that if you have one site where 25,000 people are coming over a weekend, or 5,000 people, that means that many of those people are driving a distance, pulling them out of their neighborhoods and moving them to another part of the city. And that's wonderful for a large mass gathering and creating a bunch of energy and a sense of oneness. But at the same time, our research and research of some of these individual congregations have shown that the further away you are from the church, the less likely you are to be there often, to be part of other programs within the church. And so trying to address that is, well, we'll take a group of you and allow you to meet closer to your home so you can create a somewhat more intimate grouping in your neighborhood that you can attend more frequently. But it also begins to develop the leadership within the church, because instead of asking for only one choir or one praise group or one set of leaders and elders, you can multiply that by the five or six locations. And so you're constantly then trying to develop new leadership in each of those locations. So it's a strategy for, in some ways, growth, but also in deepening the relationships between people and the organization. Unfortunately, it has some drawbacks as well. If you bring everybody in your community together in one location, you're naturally going to have a much more diverse group. You'll have people from all over the city. So you might have some more racial diversity or economic diversity. If you subdivide that community and send out those satellite churches, unfortunately, the way our cities are developed, one section of the city might be more African-American or Latino or lower-class white or upper-class white. And so then what happens is some of the satellites will end up pulling away some of that diversity that still represented in the largest idea of the church, but in the local congregations, it looks much more homogeneous.
How common is, in kind of the world of megachurches, the phenomenon that we saw with Bill Hybels in Willow Creek, in which Bill Hybels was the founding pastor and the name over the 30-some-odd years directly associated with that congregation?
Well, in some ways, Hybels and a few of the other names that we've mentioned, Rick Warren and Joel Osteen, although Joel Osteen is a good example, become almost synonymous with the church, right? And it still is true that most of the megachurches that we see out there now are still led by the person who might not have been the founder of the church, but was the person that was responsible for the tremendous growth to megachurch size. In our last survey in 2015 of megachurches, about 80% of the current pastors of megachurches were the one who was identified as creating the growth. That could also have been the person who founded it, but that's not necessarily true. So it's clear that many of those megachurch pastors are the charismatic leader. But it's also true that there are a good number of congregations of that size that have had pastoral transitions to other pastors. And with Joel Osteen, his father had grown a megachurch up to about 8,000, I believe it was, and then unexpectedly died and was replaced by Joel, who then took the church to almost 10 times that size. So it's a unique dynamic, but it is possible to replace these charismatic leaders and the church to continue on thriving and growing at that size.
In Willow Creek's case, do you believe that that might have played a role in either the inability or the unwillingness of the leadership of the church to take seriously the charges that were brought against Bill Hybels?
I do think that the dynamic that gets created in part from a founder, and then a founder who has created such success and garnered such attention from the outside world, and that there is a tremendous pressure on the elder board and the other clergy within that congregation to, in some sense, protect at any cost the identity and the brand of that leader. And that's a shame. I've seen that happen in any number of situations. It takes a tremendous amount of fortitude and strength for a board member or a board collectively to sanction someone who has essentially birthed this movement and not only brought it to life, but then gave it such tremendous success. I, unfortunately, in my years of researching megachurches, have seen any number of church boards that are essentially yes boards and are hand-selected by the senior leader, are often members of family or extended families, or are connected to some of the original families that were a part of the church. And that creates a dynamic that doesn't allow accountability to function the way it should and hinders some of the checks and balances that are necessary, which is why, as I said earlier, we strongly recommend that a large congregation think of having either a mixed board of people both with inside and outside the congregation, or having two boards where not everyone who is holding the senior leadership accountable comes underneath them in a sense in terms of the church's governance and dynamics. It's a challenging situation.
We're talking with Scott Thuma, professor of sociology of religion and director of the Hartford Institute for Religious Research at Hartford Seminary, about Willow Creek and the dynamics of a megachurch. When we come back, how does the search process for lead pastors typically work in a megachurch? Do they usually hire from within? We'll answer that question right after the break.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
The message is the mission. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
You'll find engaging illustrations, colorful layouts, and helpful charts in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 Visual Edition. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 Visual Edition. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Willow Creek and the dynamics of a megachurch. Scott Thuma is our guest, author of the books Beyond Megachurch Myth and The Other 80%. Scott, how does the search for that process of searching for pastoral leadership typically work in a megachurch? Do they usually hire from within?
Yeah, there isn't a usual in a sense, because it varies significantly if a congregation is a part of a denomination or if they're non-denominational, if they're a part of a network. Sometimes there are feeder organizations that, you know, would have a hand in helping to choose that senior leader. I think some of my colleagues, like Warren Bird, who have looked at succession issues and that sort of thing, ideally, the search should always happen before someone steps down as the leader or retires or, heaven forbid, dies in office, because you always want to be grooming that next religious leader and, for that matter, sharing the leadership so that it doesn't all fall on one person. But it really varies significantly. There are congregations who have replaced the senior leader with someone from the same family, and that's worked tremendously well. There are examples that show that replacing someone from your own family doesn't work well at all in other cases. There are also examples where nurturing a gifted leader from within the congregation and introducing them across time is a very good strategy. But it also works quite well to go from the outside and bring new people in. The only challenge with finding a leader from outside the system and bringing them in is they come in with their own culture and their own sense of where the church might be going. And it always takes a fine sort of organizational dance for that new leader to understand and learn what the culture of the existing church is, and then find a way to act in their own integrity as a leader and take the church on a new vision. If that's done too quickly, the place can fall apart, but if it's done well, it can thrive as well. So it really varies tremendously on what is the best approach there.
How do you expect, given what you know of Willow Creek, how do you expect it to move forward, and do you expect it to be able to weather this, not only the loss of its founding pastor under a deep cloud of suspicion and really just what amounts to absolutely terrible PR for the church, to put it bluntly, and then the loss of the lead pastor, the teaching pastor, and the entire group of elders? How do you expect them to weather it?
Yeah, it's hard to predict. I mean, I think what we need to be looking for is how the church moves forward from here. It's quite amazing how much momentum these large organizations have. You know, to 25,000 people in attendance is a significant mass of folks, so that even if 10, 20, 30%, 50% leave, it's still a massive organization. So it remains to be seen how the current leadership is going to select a new board, which is probably what they need to do first, is to find a new group of elders that has the trust of the membership and can continue that effort of trying to restore that trust that was broken, and then begin to put out call for clergy. You know, it's going to depend on the membership at large of Willow Creek, whether they do believe what they've always said, which is that the church is more than its charismatic leader. And if that church has truly created a sense of congregation among their people, then they too can realize that it's more than just Bill Hybels, and they weren't there for Bill Hybels. They were there for God and for the vision of the church, and that is beyond any one leader. So I wish them all the luck in the world, because we're talking about 20, 25,000 and many more souls and an example of what God can do. But it's hard to know how they're going to move forward. So certainly many of us are watching and in many ways praying that it works out well.
The financial aspect of it is another thing. These are extremely expensive organizations to run. They have large staffs and all sorts of facilities to maintain. I think Willow Creek is somewhere near $40 million, if its annual budget. I might have that wrong.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
How much of a loss of either tithing or attendance can that organization take, even given the, as you said, the sheer inertia of the of a large organization like that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of it will depend on what level of debt they're carrying. That, in my past experience, that seems to determine more than anything. A lot of the mega churches that I've looked at over the years have a very fluid budget. As much money as they bring in, they'll find ways to use that money for ministry and mission. And so there's often a good bit of flux in their budget, and that was part of the reason why when we saw in some of our previous surveys around the 2008 recession, the larger the church, the less it was significantly impacted by the declines there for a couple of years, because they had essentially a good bit more flexibility in what they were doing and how much that was costing. The only difficulty there was if they were carrying a significant amount of debt, because they still had to service that debt while also still doing ministry. So I think Willow Creek could probably weather some loss in income from giving of their members, especially if they're not carrying too much debt. And I don't know offhand what that percentage is, but it's a significant organization and has had challenges before and has weathered those. So it remains to be seen, but it will certainly have to act relatively soon. And one would hope that it's going to pull it back together. We'll see.
Finally, what impact do you think the sexual abuse scandal at Willow Creek is going to have on churches throughout the world that had been part of what was known until very recently as the Willow Creek Association?
Yeah. Well, if Willow Creek was a model in the association for what was good in terms of governance and leadership and development and that sort of thing, and that's kind of how they had always portrayed themselves, then this latest moment would perhaps be a good time for those 10 to 12, 15,000 congregations that were a part of the association to think about how they hold their leadership accountable and how much their boards do act independent as a system of checks and balances. So use this time to reflect on their own system of governance as well. But I think the Willow Creek Association had really moved to a point where it had become somewhat leadership conference, but also in some sense a network of affiliated congregations. And if that's the case, then again, it's not all just about Willow Creek. It's not all just about Bill Hybels. And while we're focusing on that at this point, there are also other significant leaders within that movement and connections and relationships that got developed that could essentially sustain, if not the Willow Creek Association, at least connections between congregations to continue beyond this.
Scott Thuma is professor of sociology of religion and director of the Hartford Institute for Religious Research at Hartford Seminary, author of the books Beyond Megachurch Myth and The Other 80%. Scott, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you, Todd. It's been a pleasure.
You have 5 days left to take advantage of the early bird registration fee of $110 for the Fall 2018 Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November the 9th and Saturday, November the 10th in Dallas, Texas. The speaking lineup includes Anthony Esalen, Chris Roseborough, Ryan Anderson, John Wark Montgomery, Beverly Yonke, and Mark Kaltoff. Attendance is limited to 400. Child care is free, courtesy of Wittenberg Academy, an online classical Lutheran school. You can find out more and you can register at issuesetc.org or give us a call during regular business hours, 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. Making the Case is November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series, Classroom Apologetics, talking with Dr. Brent Burgess about Political Science 101. How has it been influenced by big ideas like feminism? We'll answer that question. We'll also have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on Timothy. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we are committed to our Lutheran confession and heritage. Please encourage the student in your life to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.